Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Patricia Calder. The novel is set in the small town of Belmont. Is this setting an important element in the plot, Pat?
Yes, these characters are not city people. The newspaper is a small town paper. The boy, Kurt, can ride his bicycle out of town. It's not far. There's a nature reserve on the outskirts where Kurt and his best friend hang out. And the old farmer, Mr. Francis, goes to the same church as Kurt's family does in town. The fire chief is well acquainted with the editor of the newspaper and so on. It's a small community. They're all connected.
Yes.
But in the novel, also, I reach out. There's a ski holiday at Mont Tremblant, Quebec. There's a date at a jazz club in Toronto, and a road trip to PEI and New Brunswick for March break.
Right.
So,
and the main character, he's an outsider to start with, at least.
He's from New...
And so's the villain, right?
Yes, that's right. And we don't know exactly where they're from. The villain and the main character have been hired by the same newspaper editor.
Mm.
So that's what has brought them to this small town.
Mm. It's been said that the growth of the relationship between Sean Gauthier, the young newspaper reporter, and Kurt Gallant, who's only 12, is a central thread in the development of the novel. Do you agree?
Yes, and there's a mystery around why Sean feels obliged or compelled to befriend Kurt. And he does. He goes after him. He deliberately becomes a big brother to this young boy, Kurt. He follows him home. He finds out where he lives and makes a point of becoming a friend of his. I once had a professor who said, "You take a very good character and make horrible things happen to him, and you'll have a good story." And Kurt and Sean both have had horrible things happen to them in their young lives. And so the story is they are brought together more or less by the circumstance of the little girl's death. And we don't know why, we just know that they seem to be able to help each other. Kurt doesn't like Sean for a long time. He warms up to him very slowly.
Well, we know what horrible happening poor old Kurt has had to go through,
yes.
But we don't know what Sean's gone through.
We only suspect because he's such a tight-ass character. He really is. He's obsessive. He's scared. He doesn't want to write certain stories for the editor.
Mm.
And we don't know what's wrong with him. He's not a normal 22-year-old.
Well, it's good to have a bit of mystery, isn't it?
Yes.
Keeps people reading. You're about to launch Roadblock alongside a new book of your photographs. Tell us about that book and your particular photographic interests.
Well, I was very, very lucky to be on the first cruise ship with Adventure Canada to have a permit to visit Sable Island, which just became a national park in May of last year. So we were on this cruise ship, and we anchored off Sable Island, which is 300 kilometers out in the Atlantic Ocean, southeast of Halifax. And we were anchored there for 4 days. We went back and forth to the island by Zodiac 3 different times. The fourth time we intended to go, but the waves were 12 meters, so that was out of the question. But there are 500 wild horses on the island, as well as hundreds of thousands of seals, rare birds.
How big is the island? How big?
The island is 34 kilometers long, and then if you count the sand spits that go out at either end, it's 50 kilometers long. But it's only a kilometer and a half wide.
Yes.
At the widest point. So it's quite a mystery. Why is it there? What's keeping it there?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sandbar. It changes shape and it moves around, and there are 350 shipwrecks around the coast of the island.
Sounds rather overpopulated, too.
Yes.
Amazing. How do they survive?
Well, there is marram grass there and pea vegetation, which is full of protein. It's a legume. The horses, for example, eat the afterbirth of the seals, which is protein for them. and so do the birds. It's a very symbiotic place. And the manure, of course, helps to keep the plants growing. Horse manure is the best. So, anyway, I kept a journal while we were there, and when I came home, I wrote my impressions while they were still fresh in my mind, and then I collected my photographs and put the story in with the photographs. So
they're very beautiful photographs. I love the colors of the island and yes. the brown of the horses against the pale green grass and the pale, yes. pale sky.
Well,
it's great.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place. The air is almost magical. It's full of sand and sea spray and salt. You come home and you're back to the ship and you have to clean your camera because it's covered with salt and sand. It was quite an adventure. I love it.
Well, I know that you love horses. And so how about reading a part of Roadblock that has the horses in it?
Okay, I will. But I also want to mention that I had 8 of my horse photographs hung at the Royal Winter Fair this past year, and they've invited me back next year. So I'm
great.
Super happy about that. So this is a chapter that is halfway through the novel. Well, chapter 25, so a little past the middle. Kurt has developed the habit of going out to Mr. Francis's farm to ride a horse named Joy. So this is July, the second summer. In July, Kurt was on foal watch for the weekend with Mr. Francis. The mare's round belly curved low and her back tail rode high when they led her into the barn. Kurt had no idea what to expect, and Mr. Francis had only said, "It's natural, but we don't want her to foal in the field." Kurt had prepared the stall with fresh hay and a layer of sawdust, as Mr. Francis had instructed, then filled her water bucket. As he walked with her lead in one hand, he kept repeating, "You'll be okay, girl," although he felt uncertain, never having witnessed a birth himself. Mr. Francis hobbled along beside them as best he could, his arthritic hip adding a peculiar tilt to his gait. "Her instinct will tell her what to do," he said. "You'll see." When Kurt led Joy into her stall, he blew a lock of hair off his forehead and wiped the sweat from his face with the front of his T-shirt. After the door of the stall slid into place, Mr. Francis pointed to Joy's dripping teats. "Look, she's freshening." "Freshening?" thought Kurt. He saw a white bulge protruding under Joy's tail and felt as if he were witnessing something private. Inside, a transparent film was the clear outline of a small hoof. Joy stood quietly for a few minutes. Then she danced restlessly in a circle. With great effort, she bent her front knees and lowered herself onto the floor of the stall. Kurt moved to her rear to check if there was any progress. The white sack was growing longer. 2 hooves, and yes, a profile that was definitely a nose poked out. Joy began heaving and sighing loudly, occasionally rolling from belly to side. She snorted and huffed and moaned. Her rear hooves scrabbled on the straw as if they were trying to find purchase against which to push. Kurt's pulse was racing. "Is she okay, Mr. Francis?" he asked. "Yep, she's doing good." Mr. Francis shoved his cap back on his head before kneeling down in order to grab onto those 2 hooves. "Have to make sure the foal doesn't slip back inside." He braced himself. "Don't want to break her legs, though. I'm just holding, see?" Joy's sides heaved and rippled, and the noise coming from deep inside her sounded like thunder rumbling. She stretched her neck long, then tossed her mane and lay over on her side. Kurt dropped beside her and began stroking her head and neck. "Good job, girl. You'll be okay." Joy's eyes were half closed. Kurt felt weak and stupid beside the huge mound of her chestnut flesh. "Can't we help her? What can we do?" Her restless rocking from side to belly continued for several minutes until suddenly the shoulders and torso of the foal slipped out. The foggy film surrounding the newborn bore white veins, etched like a map over a small bundle. Mr. Francis let go of the legs for a minute to clear the sack away from the mouth and nostrils of the foal. It burped and spewed a watery fluid like a nearly drowned puppy, then licked its chops and tasted air for the first time. Only the hind legs remained inside the mare now. In seconds they slid out with a gush, the rear body shrouded in a silvery veil tearing open as Mr. Francis ran his large hands over the bony ribs. He peered between the foal's legs. "She's a filly, all right. I figured." Kurt scrambled to his feet for a closer look. The filly was glistening brown with a white star on her forehead and four white socks. Kurt rushed back to Joy, who was stretching her neck around, trying to see her baby. "You did it, girl! You did it, all on your own!" The foal was still attached to the mother. A white and gray braid like rope was strung between the two of them. "That's the umbilical cord," Mr. Francis said. The mare's nose reached back toward the foal, and the foal stretched her nose toward her mother, and they gradually wriggled close enough to sniff each other. Then Joy stood up, breaking the cord in a spill of blood, and turned to lick her daughter's face. The foal's head bobbed like a toy. Within minutes, one white sock shot out in front, and she tried to raise herself, then fell back in the straw, her hind legs tangled up with each other. She extended her two front legs and flopped up, only to fall again. The next time, she positioned her forelegs and bounced squarely onto all fours, braced like a sawhorse, but wobbling with wide-eyed surprise. Mr. Francis steadied her as she stepped gingerly toward her mother's teats. "Wow," said Kurt. "Look at her." "What are you going to call her?" Mr. Francis asked. Kurt's face puckered. He stood tall, and reaching one hand under Joy's neck, looked her in the eye. "Her name is Jenny, isn't it, girl?" he said.
Thank you, Pat. That was great. So, where can listeners purchase Rosebrock? Are you going to have launches open to the general public?
Oh, yes. The first one is Friday, April the 10th, after Easter, 7 to 9 p.m. at 66 King East in Coburg. And the next one is Tuesday, April the 14th at Dreamers Cafe in Port Hope from 5 to 7. And there'll be one in Kingston and one in Peterborough. Both books will be available on my website, www.patriciacalder.ca.
Good. So to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived and you can hear them anytime from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.